Thank you for everything this summer. It's been a wonderful time here. And of course, on your end and on ours, it's with mixed emotions that we're going to be heading back on, let's see, Thursday we fly to D.C., and then we'll be with Rebecca's dad and stepmom a couple days out there. We're going to visit one supporting church on Sunday and then fly out. Rebecca could tell you which day we fly out after that for Addis. And then we're going to be in the Capitol for about a week or week and a half. We've had a lot of response. I sent out the little sheet that had needs and things if people wanted to contribute to, we were raising money for. And we've had a lot of people from various churches that have responded to that. And so the kids are probably going to go to Bingham for a week, and I'm going to try to meet with all the Ethiopians that I need to start making some of those things happen, the water projects, the electricity, some of those things. And so then by September, I think it's around September 13th or 14th, we'll be down in Durrani, and then we'll be there for the next 2 years, 21 months. Okay, so what I put together here is a little bit of what our last year and a half was like, and then also several pictures and stories of what our students are doing, some of our current students, and then some of our graduates, to give you a little bit of feel of where these guys are at, the work that they're doing, and the work that you guys are supporting and supporting us to be helping with. Of course, you guys know all our kids. Okay, go down one. So we've been in Ethiopia for a year and a half. The first 10 months we were in the capital, Addis. Rebecca and I were doing language school. The kids were going to Bingham Academy, although Hudson and Emmett were largely at home with our house worker. And then we were at language school about 200 meters up the road, and then we'd come home at lunch every day. Okay, you can go to the next one. Here's Vivian and Vale in their little school taxi, getting ready to, I think they're leaving our house, getting ready to go to school. And most of you know that we have some of the stories that have gone on with that. That was not necessarily easy ride all the time. Next. Now that one looks dark here. That yellow and red bus there, those are terror on wheels in Ethiopia. Those buses are the main city transportation. Well, there's two city transportations. One of them is the little Toyota minivan, but it's more of a boxy minivan that seats about 15 people. And then there's these buses. And there's a lot of Ethiopians, including our house workers, that go, you don't get on there unless you have empty pockets, because you will not walk off that bus with your cell phone in your pocket. But it's a really cheap ride if you need a cheap ride. Only they can put about 200 people on one of those things, so you'll never know if you got your pocket picked. This is the main square as you drive from our house to the SIM Capitol. The whole thing's been under construction. They do things a little bit differently in Ethiopia. The map that I bought of the Capitol when I got there was marked, I think it was 2011, was the copyright on it. And it had a railroad going through the middle of the town, and then from the middle all the way down. Only there's no railroad there's no metro. And so I asked some people, I said, why is this metro on the map? They said, oh, we're going to make it. And I said, really? You're going to make it? And after living there for a while, I didn't have any belief that they actually were going to make it. But then this in the last six or eight months, they started it, and they don't start on one spot. They want the whole town to know that they're working on the metro, so they work on the entire thing simultaneously. So the entire city is cut in half this way and then cut down that way, and it locks up traffic forever. It should only be a 10 or 12 minute drive to our little office, and the last several times it's taken me an hour and a half to 2 hours. It all funnels down to one little road, and you drive under the construction, and you'll drive under the cranes and back, and they snake it back and forth across the construction site a few times, then double back on an alley, and then you can go. So the entire town is funneling down to one lane as it goes through. Okay, next one. This is our garbage service. They park a truck, and then all these teams with their wheelbarrows, the makeshift wheelbarrows, head out for several blocks radius. It's not quite fast food, but it's almost the same concept. When you're driving home from work or school, you just stop by and pick up your goat on the way home. This is the house that we lived in is right behind me there, where I'm standing. And the kids, obviously, they're sitting around a little fire there. Right outside where we lived, this is just little local sites. This is right outside the gate of our compound. There's shoe shiners everywhere. And this is one of the shoe shiners that I always stopped at. And then the tailor is just down the road. I have several shirts that I don't know how it works exactly, but I'm always getting holes in my shirts. I mean, just little stuff sticking out from fences and doorways and get scars on it. Is that going by itself or are you doing it? Okay, good. This is a picture of our house church that we were a part of in the Capitol. There's a couple big evangelical churches in Addis, but we found that we wanted to just get to know a few of the families that were part of our organization and a couple other families more intimately. And the doing it this way also, the teaching was better. You can see there's a couple folks from Africa. There's a Sudanese family right in the middle, and there's a fellow from Guinea-Bissau who's there. Several families from SIM, a couple families from Christian Missionary Fellowship were part of our house church, and we just rotated house to house with those families. We're still not exactly sure. You guys can pray for this. Still not exactly sure how everything is going to play out where we're at now, because on Sundays, if we go down to the little local church, half the service is in the tribal language, and the other half that is in Amharic is so fast that I can pick up 10 or 20% of what's going on, and of course the kids can't pick any of it up, and the services are 3 hours long. So it's a long time to sit there if you don't understand anything, and not necessarily the most beneficial. So we're going to have to try to figure out how we're doing church. We're probably going to be meeting with some other families that are in the couple hour, within a couple hours distance of us, and once a month spending a weekend together. There's an SIM location where they've got a medical clinic, and at that place that's on the edge of a lake, someone from SIM built a little cabin that two families can stay in at the same time. And so I think that we're going to try to gather together there. There's two SIM families there, and bring in a couple others and have at least a monthly fellowship for a weekend. Next. There's other familiar faces. I don't know if you can see them or not, but in the picture there's Rebecca and I, and then Rachel, and then Steve and Diana. And this is way, way up north Lalibela area, which is one of the main locations of the ancient Orthodox Church, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. So our first 10 months, we were learning language, learning Amharic, which is a difficult language to learn, but we're getting better. We probably could graduate first grade now. And the first day at our school, which is supposed to be in English, and this is the way a lot of things go in Ethiopia. Our school theoretically is supposed to be in English, but after teaching for about 10 minutes, I realized there's only about 5 or 6 people that are really, really tracking with what I'm saying out of 30 in the classroom. So I had to immediately try to start teach in English and then try to give my translation in Amharic. And so that's how our class has gone so far. Trial by fire. The next couple pictures are from Durrani, from the area where we're living now. We're very, very thankful to be out of the capital for a lot of reasons. The pace of life is slower, and then the setting is just beautiful, and it's going to be great for the kids to just run and play. This is the field kind of down the hill from our house and right near the classrooms. You can see they're throwing up the grain. They're threshing and winnowing. They've got their little winnowing forks and they're throwing it up. Chaff blows off and the seeds all fall. It's all, I think, 90, I heard from one person, 98% of the agriculture in Ethiopia is still all done by hand. I mean, it's 85% of Ethiopians are subsistence farmers. So that's the vast majority of the country. That's what they do, and that's how they live. 98% of that is, it's all by hand. I mean, it's all like the Bible times. They've got the ox and the plows out. They thresh it with the cattle walking in circles. They winnow it by throwing it up and scoop it into their little piles. The boys in the picture there, you can see if the picture went farther left, our house would be kind of up on that left side. But that little mountain is right behind us. And then the sunset would be directly facing the boys. So you can kind of imagine we're kind of nestled in, it's not like the Rocky Mountains, but we're nestled in these little highland type mountains. And we live at about 7,000 feet, which is, it's really beautiful and temperate year round. Here's Rebecca trying to sew by candlelight and kerosene lantern, it looks like. Our electricity's spotty, but we're hoping that this fall, I don't know how long it'll take us to get put together, but one fellow donated the funds to put in a solar and battery system for our house and then also one for the school, because a lot of times our secretary and our director, I mean, they're working on things. We're printing papers for the students, printing notes for the class, and electricity goes out. And so we're done. Things shut down, and we sit and wait until the electricity comes back. The kids there, they were sitting at the table in the dining hall. We're eating meals with the students. Go to the next one. This building on the left, our house is on that right picture. It's the front of the house, kind of a screened-in porch there. And then the building on the left is a little kids' schoolhouse that's under construction. And Lord willing, it's going to be done when we get back, but I don't know. Lord willing. Please, Lord. They use eucalyptus for almost all their construction. They dig a little trench and put all these poles in and frame it in. And then on the other side, for about 3 or 4 weeks, there's a couple boys that come. They bring straw and water and they sit there and they mash all the bricks up and they they're not actually making bricks, but they're mashing the mud and the straw together, and then they take it by hand and just pack it in from both sides of those poles. And then at the very end, you put a little thin layer of concrete over all of it. Kind of an adobe style. Okay, next. Here is a picture of our students. These 30 students are on campus right now. The program that we do, the students are on campus for, used to be 2 semesters. Now it's 4 semesters. And we're basically doing classroom work. They're learning Bible, theology, cross-cultural communication, language acquisition classes, things that you need, skills that you need to move to an area where you don't fit in. You don't know the language. You don't understand the culture. How do you start learning those things? And then after they're finished with the classwork, so there's 18 of our students that you don't see here. Those 18 students have moved out to an area. Right now, all of those students are in Muslim areas. And so they're actually doing the work of learning a new language, learning a new culture, preaching the gospel, trying to plant churches. And so that's part of their training for about 10 months is what they're... And then that will complete their course. Okay, next picture. 18 are in the field training in the Afar and Somali areas, and then 30 on campus. Two of our students there, the fellow in blue on the left, he and the gal in the orange shirt are married. She's out in a Somali area because they didn't get started on their coursework at the same time. He already had a degree, so he was in a different track. So he's on campus right now, and she's out in the Somali area. And she'll finish in, I believe, in November. She'll finish that. And then they'll be back together till he finishes his coursework. Here's a couple of our students. So I want to tell you just a little bit about our students. The fellow that you just saw in the blue, Ashagare, he had served as an evangelist and a pastor. So an evangelist for 7 years, and they have an official, most of Africa has an official evangelist position. Usually it's a person who's tied to a church. They're under the authority of a local church, but their whole job is to go preach the gospel in that area, door to door, house to house, however they can, small groups, whatever. So he had done that for several years, and from one church, got a second church started, and then he served as a pastor at that first church for about 12 years. And now he's gone from that church to our school, and then that church is sending he and his wife, once they finish, out to some new area, either a tribal area or a Muslim area. This fellow on the right, to the right of me, is Lima. I got to go visit where he had worked. We went to a funeral way, way out in the, past the Bali Mountains. So we were heading southeast Ethiopia. This is the first place I saw combines. They actually have some huge flatland areas, and it was harvest season, so this is the only combines I'd ever seen in the country. The Ethiopians started asking me, "Well, do you guys have combines in yours?" I was almost embarrassed to tell them how much bigger our combines were, because they were asking all about them, and I thought, "Oh man," because that seems to be how most conversations go. "Do you guys have this and this in your country?" And I say, "Well, yeah." "Is it like these ones?" I say, "Well, it's about 3 times that big, if you can imagine." But out in that area, Lima had been working among a Muslim group for four or five years. And they had 4 house groups in these different towns. 2 of those are still going. 1, they built a building and they've planted a church there, and there's a church with about 40 people. Before, he and another guy had been there. And his goal is to finish his coursework and go back to that same area and keep planting churches. And he's still, from a distance, he's still overseeing three or four young men who are continuing that work of just preaching the gospel to all these Muslims, trying to get more churches established in the surrounding towns. Next slide. This fellow in the middle with the, I don't know if it's pink or red and white striped shirt, he was among the Hamer people. And you can look on our website. I put some pictures up from the Hamer people. This is one of the tribes that's located in southwest Ethiopia. And you'll notice most of his girls there are pretty close to the same age. This fellow on the right, I don't know if that's a nephew or a brother, but it's not one of his kids. But those girls are all about the same age, except for the little girl in red in the center of the picture. She's from the Hamer tribe, and if you're familiar with some of the custom, it's just a pagan custom. In some of these tribes, if the wrong teeth come in first, you know, moms, which teeth usually come in first? I don't know. It's the bottom middle, right? If the wrong ones come in first, say you get the top ones, or you get an incisor that comes in first, it's a bad omen and the baby's cursed. And nobody in the tribe wants it. And so they throw it out. They go take it to the edge of the village, they leave it under, put it under a cactus. And if the elements don't kill it during the day, the hyenas get it at night. And so somebody was walking along and found this baby and said, well, we know there's this Christian and we know that he wouldn't do this to babies. I can't keep the baby, but this person picked it up, took it to him, and so he began raising this child. He'd been out in that area for about 7 years. And he's at our school right now. So in about a year and a half, he'll be packing up his family to move to another area. Either, again, most of our students are going to be going to Muslim areas, or there's still a few tribal groups that don't have the gospel. And so that's primarily where all of our students are going. Next picture. This fellow on the right, Elias, he is a joy. He is a live wire. When he was in high school and college as a young man, he's a little bit older than our average student. Our average student is probably mid to late 30s. It's not a typical Bible school where you've got a lot of guys that have just come out of high school or have studied something else at a college and come over. Most all of our guys are older, and that's because one of the requirements to be in this school is you have to have served as an evangelist or a pastor for a minimum of 2 years, full time. And they do that because we're only taking guys who have already shown that they're competent as ministers of the gospel. And so It also makes it a joy at our school to teach because everybody's serious about being there. But this fellow Elias, he's about 60, and he is, during the communist days, he became a Christian and he was thrown in and out of prison several times and eventually fled south to a town called Dila, where he met his wife and he's got his children. They've got five or six kids, and he said, we've got 3 years left. Then they'll be out of the house, and my wife and I, we're moving wherever God wants us to. And he's just a great joy. I really wish you could meet him. Next slide. The next few pictures are some of our graduates at work. So a couple pictures from, this is all from an Easter trip that I took. I went to southwest Ethiopia and visited, if you remember the first picture I said, Ashagare and his wife. He had a blue shirt on. I went with him. He was kind of my buddy for the trip, or I was his tag along. I don't know. But we went and visited a lot of the graduates that were in his area. We arrived at night, so unfortunately I don't have great pictures of this fellow. But on the left is Abraham and his wife, and I forget her name. Right below him, there you can see his little grass-roofed house and his little bicycle there. So, you know, we've been talking about the bicycles that we've been raising money for. Well, it's guys like him. He's out in the middle of nowhere. It's an 8-hour trip. No, sorry, for him, it's a 4-hour, for him, it's a 4-hour trip into the market by foot. So you can imagine, even just for food, what a bicycle can do for you. But in their area, he travels around to the surrounding villages. He's following up the work of another missionary. So there had been a missionary in this area that had started a church, and this church is really strong, and they've got about 200 believers. And so what he's doing is he's taking young men with him, and they're going to all the surrounding tribes that haven't heard the gospel, or surrounding villages, and they're trying to establish churches there. And this was also on our list of needs. This was also one of the needs where we said we need to build a small church building with a room attached to it. On top of our car, when we drove out to meet him, we took a big load of grass, this long grass, because the rainy season is starting. And we walked in and sat down. His mattresses are soaked. His clothes are soaked. And he says, we've got to get a tin roof in here. So that was one of the things. I think it was about $1,000 to get a tin roof put on for a little house for them. The top right picture was just on the drive out to where he's at. And that bottom right picture are several of the local believers from the villages that he's working with. Okay, next picture. This was the most treacherous part of our journey. We went up on top of a mountain called Buska. And until a couple of years ago, the only way to get up here was by helicopter. The little grassy spot in that middle picture, it was the helicopter landing spot. There's one or two SIM missionaries that have a helicopter's license, and they go visit some of these areas. And we took it by car. And when we pulled up to this road, I looked at this. I said, there's Ethiopian guys with me. And I said, are you sure we can make it up here? We were taking supplies out to all of these. As we were visiting these missionaries, we were taking supplies out. Flour, teff, buna, coffee, beans, sugar, just some of the staples that they used. And we pulled up there, and he said, oh, no problem. He said, with my Toyota 4x4 truck, he said, if I don't have anything in it, I can get up every time. I said, well, okay. He said, but your car's stronger, it has a long wheelbase, you'll have no problem. And so we put it in low four-wheel drive, and sure enough, we climbed the whole thing. I've not been out on any of those Jeep four-wheel drive courses that you see on TV or ESPN or whatever. But this to me looked about like that, but we did fine. The fellow with the box around him, Mateos, he's one of our graduates, and they're really praying for a second worker there. I mean, it is a lonely, lonely place. It took 18 years before they had their first convert in this area. There have been missionaries here for 30 years. And the gal in red there, and she's also in the top right, was the first one to believe. And she's been a believer now for 12 years. And she was the hardest, most opposed. And now she has become she's one of the most joyful people we'd ever met. She didn't stop serving us and smiling from the time we arrived. And she has also become the boldest witness in all of these areas. So that we're on the very top of the mountain and there's little villages further down the mountain. And she's become the most bold witness for Christ in that area. Really, really a sweet testimony to God's grace. Next. Here's a couple more of our graduates. The fellow on the right is our graduate, Teshome. And again, you can see the bicycle there. And you can't tell from this picture, but you can see the land behind him. It looks like that stretched out in every direction. He's been in this area for 2.5 years. And the two guys on the upper left are evangelists that he's been training and working with. And they're going to stay at this location. After 2.5 years in this location, they've got about 200 people who have turned away from their tribal religion and turned to Christ. And so they built this little church here. It's among the Mursi people. And the Mursi people, I put some pictures on our website also. You can look at this later. They're the ones that if you see on National Geographic, have the great big lip plates. That's this people. We were out visiting them. I bought one for Rebecca so we've got it. So if we come back next time and she's got a big lip plate, you'll know why. You see those things and you go, whose idea was that? I mean, the first guy to look at his life and say, you know what would really make you look good, honey? We'll just cut that open and just stuff this in there. The what? Create the market. The older man in the middle picture, they have had a warm welcome in this area. Not every place is as open, but this older man immediately opened the door, and he was one of the leading chiefs of this clan in the Mursi tribe, and they made friends with him immediately. He welcomed them in. Kind of the Luke 10 idea, the man of peace. Jesus tells the disciples, you find this man of peace, stay with him, and he'll kind of be a gatekeeper into the community. And that's exactly what they found. He opened the door, let them have a hearing, and people began to come to Christ very, very quickly. So our graduate, Teshome, he's going to be, after the rainy season's over here in a couple months, he's going to be going straight behind him about 40 kilometers to a new area to start a new work. There's no gospel. There's no churches. There's no workers in that area. So he's going to be moving on into that direction. Okay, next. All right. You can go to the next one. We're done now. I didn't get a lot of those things done this summer, so we just need to skip that slide. Okay, we've got a few minutes, and of course, after church, you can ask Rebecca and I anything. Do you have any questions regarding the work or life in Ethiopia or our graduates, the students? No. Yeah, so they are not, and the evangelists are tied more directly to a local church, meaning they're in the same location as the local church. These missionaries are out where there's no churches. So they're supported by local churches, but they're out where there are none. And that's a, you know, another thing you can pray for the school. Just in the mindset of the Ethiopians, when you're an evangelist or a pastor, they do pretty well of taking care of the pastors and the evangelists financially, providing food, providing some salary. And then when they're missionaries, the churches are excited to support missionaries and to let their church know, hey, we're supporting a missionary in this area or this area, and to pray for them. But then in that time in between when they're at our school, we're having a hard time getting the churches to be big enough in their vision to understand these guys have been serving in your church and you need to keep supporting them while they're at school. Because like I said, these are not single guys just out of high school. These are guys with families. And so we've run into that with several of our students, that they're having a hard time helping the churches understand that. But until our school was started in 2000, they had an almost 0% success rate planting churches outside their little highland tribes. Most of our church, we work with the Kalihewa Church, and most all of them are from highland tribes in south central Ethiopia. And for decades, they have had an almost 0% success rate planting churches in an Orthodox area or in a Muslim area or getting out to some of the far tribal areas. They couldn't do it because they didn't understand how to relate to a new culture, how to get outside, learn the language, and then began to plant churches in a new culture. Our students have been tremendously successful since 2000. And the whole denomination recognizes that, and they're like, we are sending all of our students there. And they've even started these hub schools to give all the evangelists the same kind of training because it's so successful. But the church mentality hasn't caught up yet to see the importance of supporting the students to go to the school and then to go out in the area. So, okay. Any other questions? Yes, Jay. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. And during this next year or two, we also want to get more and more involved with our students who are out in the field. We don't know the best way to do that, but that's one aspect that we haven't stepped into yet. But we really want to get out there in the field with them. So far, we've been at the school and taught at the school, but we don't want to stop just there. Do you have a question? So you have the Orthodox, and it's kind of like an ancient Catholic church, but it's kind of combined with the witch doctors of Africa, and it's really syncretized. The Muslims, of course, they're following Muhammad and the Quran. These tribal groups, that we call them animists, which means spiritists. They're trying to appease different spirits and demons so that those spirits won't afflict them, or that they might help them, or that they might curse their enemy tribe next door. So their religion is to engage all of these different spirits. And so that's why witch doctors are so important, because they're helping them. They're the ones that have the real contact with the spirit world. So if you're afflicted by a bad spirit, you got to go to the witch doctor, because he's going to be able to get things right. Uh, 45% Ethiopian Orthodox Church. 1/3 is Muslim. About 19 or 20% is Protestant. And then, and now, because the gospel's been there so long, most of those Protestants were all tribal before. Most of the Christians that are in Ethiopia today are all from tribal background. So the tribal people are 2 to 3%. Not a lot of them left.